Okay, this is share number 19, actually. We may have to be mikatzer. Sort of a virus in my throat. I hope it will play by ear, see how far it goes. Reb Chaim, of course, Reb Chaim Elojin, being the greatest and the most loyal Talmud of the Goyen, it is brought down that no matter how many times Reb Chaim saw the Goyen, the Vilna Goyen, there never was any dulling in the awe and the reverence for which he held from him. Usually, by nature, when someone basically makes an acquaintance with a great person for the first time, you stand in awe, and of course in reverence, and have all of the kovod. As time goes along, and you frequent the same person many, many days and weeks and so on, as time goes along, you become more comfortable and more familiar, and somehow the feeling of awe somehow is sort of like blunted and sort of like withers away. But Lamaisa, this did not happen at all regarding the attitude that Reb Chaim had towards his Rebbe the Goyim. As many times as he would see him, as frequently as he would see him, there was never any dulling of the awe from which he held him. And Reb Chaim's son, and who was his successor, Rosh Yeshiva of Elojin, which of course was Reb Itzel of Elojin, Reb Yitzchak of Elojin, described an incident that when he was like 7 years old, he says that even after the Goyen's death, when Reb Chaim himself was already recognized as being a leader, being a foremost leader of the generation, he said, Reb Itzel said, I remember when my father Reb Chaim would talk about the Goyen, recall, he says, the relationship that he had with the Goyen, he would grow pale. And he began trembling every time he mentioned the Goyen's name to his Talmidim. Reb Chaim said of himself that whenever he reflected on the depth of the Goyen's Torah learning or his perfection in piety, in humility, and purity, his whole body would begin to shake out of the greatness, of the unusual greatness of the Goyen. And it is said that before one of Reb Chaim's periodic visits to the Goyen, he once took his little son, Reb Itzel, actually, Reb Itzel asked his father to accompany him to the Goyen. He's going to the Goyen, he says, he's your Rebbe, so I'd like to go along with you. Reb Chaim appeared to be surprised by the idea that a mere boy would like to go and see the Goyen. So his voice actually wavered as he said to his son, Reb Chaim said, son, you really want to see the Rebbe? And Reb Itzel himself was taken aback, said, by the depth of his father's reaction against taking him along to see the Goyen. But nevertheless, he insisted that he wished to go, and despite Reb Chaim's misgivings, he eventually consented to allow his son to come along with him. It is said that years later, that Reb Itzel described the journey to Vilna, he said, to another Odom Godel, and that was Reb Shmuel of Salant, who of course became the Rav of Yerushalayim. So Reb Itzel, many years later, described the visit with his father Reb Chaim to the Goyen, he described it to Reb Shmuel of Salant. And he said the following, that as they were traveling from Volozhin to Vilna, he said the closer that he came to Vilna, the more Reb Chaim, he says, seemed to be transformed by his thoughts of the Goyen. His face would begin to grow pale, and signs of worry lines of worry began to etch on the face. And by the time they reached Vilna, says Reb Itzel, he barely recognized his father Reb Chaim. And he said, once again, Reb Chaim asked his son, do you really want to see the Rebbe? By the time they reached the Goyen's door, Reb Chaim's knees were knocking together as he once again asked his son, who is now a little bit terrified already, do you really want to see the Rebbe? He says, I mean, what could there be? I'm going to see the Rebbe. It's so seems scary. So Lamaisa, virtually the only contemporary ever mentioned the same breath with a Goyen was Reb Chaim's brother, Reb Zalmele. Zalmele was a genius of geniuses, a Goyen of Goyenim. Literally, there's no part of Torah that he did not know. Literally. And it was said about him that had he lived literally thousands of years before, he would be considered to be one of the great scholars of the generation. Reb Zalmele was known, and the Goyen himself held him in great reverence. He was a Talmud of the Goyen also. So as mentioned, the only contemporary that was sort of like mentioned the same breath with the Goyen was Reb Chaim's brother, Reb Zalmele. So after Reb Zalmele passed away, preached maturely, young, as Reb Chaim outlived him quite a bit. So after Reb Zalmele's passing, there were those that argued that had Reb Zalmele managed to live on maybe a few years longer, he would have attained the stature of the Goyen. He would have been possibly as great as the Goyen. But despite the love and respect that Reb Chaim had for his brother, it was Reb Chaim who most strenuously rejected any comparison to the Goyim. No matter how great you can become, there's no comparison because you have no idea the greatness of the Goyim himself. And in response to those basically who claimed that, who knows, maybe Reb Zalmele, had he lived to an old age, that maybe he could have equaled the Goyim in knowledge, Reb Chaim referred to the statement the Chazal say regarding the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and Yeshua. And the Gemara said when Moshe Rabbeinu passed away and the mantle of leadership was transferred to Yeshua, so it is the Kenim Shebedor, the elders of the generation, the people who remembered Moshe Rabbeinu very long ago, they would say very clearly, Pnei Moshe Kepnei Chama, the face of Moshe Rabbeinu is like the sun, but Yeshua is only like the moon. Reb Chaim pointed out, you see, it's the Zakenim who could make the elders who recognized Moshe Rabbeinu in his young age were able to say that Moshe Rabbeinu is like the sun and Yeshua is only like the moon. Why? Because the younger generation who did not know Moshe at the young age, they might have thought that maybe Moshe in his young age was only like Yeshua. But the elders, the elders of the generation, remembered Moshe Rabbeinu when Moshe Rabbeinu was still young, they saw there was no comparison, even at Moshe's young age, to Yeshua. Those pointed out, Reb Chaim, that everyone who knew the Goyen as a young man could testify there was no comparison between him, as great as Reb Zalman was, no comparison between him and the Goyen, at even at that early age that the Goyen was. It was said that at a particular time, Reb Chaim, it was always, by the way, lavish praise for his brother, because Mez was a genius of genius. It was a goyin agoyinim, literally, Reb Zalmele. And so there was Talmidim who joined him for a Shabbos Suda, Reb Chaim. So Reb Chaim said that my brother, Reb Zalmele, Reb Zalman, had he lived, as we said, in the time of the Tanoim and Amoraim, the time of the Gemara and the Mishnah, he would have been said to be great among them. And Reb Chaim maintained, and he said, that our master, which is the Goyim, he was appraised with Zalmele, he says, in tremendous terms, he says, and therefore, when the Talmidim says, we can't imagine how much greater could the Goyim really be. If Zalmele is so great, so how is it that on the one hand, his brother Reb Chaim praises his brother, his younger brother, to such a great extent, and yet, he totally rejected any slight comparison between Zalmele and the Goyim. And Reb Chaim said the following, when again was attempted to compare his brother, as great as he was, to the Goyen, and he said that even if Reb Zalmele would live for 2,000 years, he would not have attained a fraction, he said, of what the Goyen attained. And this sharp response actually left the Talmidim sort of like downfounded, because they struggled to reconcile. On the one hand, Reb Chaim praised his brother Reb Zalmele to be the greatest of the great, and yet, in comparison to the Goyen, there seemed to be such a great distance that Reb Chaim held. And one can only imagine how great can someone already be, so much, much greater than in fact Reb Zalmele. So, very well known is the following moshel that Reb Chaim once gave. It was one moshel that he once gave. And he said the following. he gave an example from the Tfilah of Ashrei. The Tfilah of Ashrei says, which is basically recited three times a day. And he said, basically, most people know Ashrei by heart. Most people know Ashrei by heart. But ask a person, he says, ask a person, mention a word in Ashrei, and ask him to say the immediate word before that. You don't know. What you have to do, you start a posik before, and it's going to lead you on. It's going to lead you on. You know Ashrei by heart. But if you throw out a word right in the middle of Ashrei, tell me the words before it. Not going to be able to answer. You're going to have to start a posik before, and it's going to lead you. You're going to know. So that's my brother, Reb Zalman. He knew all of Shas, the whole Torah, the way we know Ashrei. But the Goy knew Torah in a way that we don't even know Ashrei. He knew it backwards and forwards. You know why?
Because when you have an ashrei siddur open in front of you, then you know right away the immediate word. Because you see it. The goyin had all of Torah in front of him, like in front of the page. That was the difference, he says, between the goyin and his brother, Rav Zalman. So as great as you are, he knew Torah like we knew ashrei. But the goyin knew it in a way that we don't even know ashrei. That was the goddess of goyin. That was the greatness. So we go here to the Ruach Chaim. And it's Daf Lamed Beis, page Lamed Beis, the edition that you have, Al Gemilas Chasodim. Okay, so we have Al Gemilas Chasodim. This refers to the Mishnah again. Thou Shloisha Devar Moila Moimed. The world stands on three pillars, Al Atoiro, Val Avoida, and on Gemilas Chasodim. So says Reb Chaim here in Ruach Chaim. Well, Gemilas Chasodim. Hine Koyde Matan Torah, before the Torah was given, none of the first 2,000 years from creation on, the first 2,000 years until Torah was given, Hine Koyde Matan Torah, Hoyerak Gemilas Chasodim Ve'avoido. We didn't have all three pillars, because we didn't have Torah. So until the Torah was given, we only had the two pillars. Which two pillars? It was Gemilas Chasodim, doing acts of chesed, one to the other. And we had what was called Avoida. Now, what's Avoida, as we'll soon see? Because there was the concept of Karbonis. We found Noach right after the Mabel, where he sacrificed Karbonis. We found here and there, we find the concept of Karbonis already at the time, as he's going to point out soon. We didn't have Torah, though. Before Torah, we didn't have Torah. So what did we have? We had only two of the pillars, Gemilas Chasodim and Avoida. Now, Hagam Shomru Bemedrish, even though the Medrash seems to tell us Shekoidem Matan Torah Lohayirak Gemilas Chasodim, Reb Chaim says there is a Medrash that seems to say that before Matan Torah we only had one pillar. There was only Gemilas Chasodim, we didn't have Avoida. Reb Chaim says that cannot be, because there was a concept of Karbonis. So what does it mean? What does the Medrash mean? That before Matan Torah we only had Gemilas Chasodim, which means we didn't have Avoida, Perusha, you know what it means? Shlohoya Kvius. Before Matan Torah, there was no established time to bring Karbonis. That's what the Medrash means. Certainly before Matan Torah, there was a concept of Karbonis. But the Medrash said we didn't have Karbonis, it means we didn't have a Kvius. We didn't have established times, Lavoida, like Tamidim, like today, after the Torah was given, we have Korban Tomid every day, twice, Kevesecha Tasa Baboiker, Kevesecha Sheinim Ben Rabayim. On Shabbos we have Mesofim, on Yom Tov we have Mesofim, Ka'achar Matan Torah. But nevertheless, even before Matan Torah, Harayodim Arishin Hikrif Shor Par Makrim. This is a pasuk in Tehillim. So upon this, that Odom Arishin, actually, that he sacrificed a par, a full grown bull. Makrim means was full of horns, possessed horns, a fully mature bull. Odom Arishin was Makrif. And Kayin, the Hevel, the Noyach, Kiyum Kol Olam Kuloi. Right? Which actually held up the world, Nasa de Reach Nichoyach Karbonoi. It's basically of the sweet smelling service of the various karbonis that each one brought. So the point is, Reb Chaim says that even before the Torah was given, we did have Avoida, not in an established way. Not that you have to bring something every day or something, but there was a concept of Avoida. And Reb Chaim says, Ubepochas Mishnei, he says, Raglayim Ein Hoylam Oymet. He says, the world cannot withstand if there's not at least two legs, two pillars. The same way that a human being. Human being, right? If he does not have 2 feet, he can't walk, he can't stand. The same way the world, at least. After Matan Torah, we had 3 legs, we had 3 pillars. But in order for the world to exist, to be able to exist before Matan Torah, we had to have at least 2. Without 2 raglayim, without 2 feet, he says, the world cannot be oymet, the world cannot stand. Why? Dugmas Odom. Similar to a person, a human being, Shu Oilam Koton. We know that a human being is always referred to as a miniature world. Right? Kolamatzl Nefeshachas Misoil. Somebody who saves even one life is like saving an entire world. A human being basically is considered to be a miniature world, all unto itself. The same way that a human being is an Oilam Koton, and if he does not have 2 legs, he can't stand, the world also, at large, has to have at least 2 legs to stand on. The 2 legs, so before Matan Torah, there had to be 2 legs. We didn't have Torah, so what did we have? We had, he said, we had Gemilas Chasodim, and we had Avoida. Rak accept this as Acher Matan Torah. However, after the Torah was given,
listen to what Reb Chaim says. Ein ho avoido ugmilus chasodim shel koydem matan Torah klum. Reb Chaim says, once the Torah is given, the whole concept of what chesed means, the whole concept changed. What might have been considered chesed before the Torah was given, listen to this. Once the Torah was given, it's no longer considered chesed. You need chesed al pi Torah. You need chesed al pi Torah. It's not what society decides as chesed. Once the Torah was given, the definition of chesed changed. The definition of avoid of karbonis also changed. For example, hakarbonis, now that the Torah was given, all the sacrifices that were sacrificed before the Torah was given, yeshchut echutz. If you don't shecht them the proper place, it's considered shchut echutz. You shechted it out of the boundaries, and one is chayiv koros. What's chayiv means is life is supposed to be cut off. In other words, once we have a Beis HaMikdash, once we have a Torah, we have guidelines. A korban can only be sacrificed in your shalayim in the Beis HaMikdash. What happens if you shecht it outside of the Beis HaMikdash? Yes, chayiv aleim koros. Can be chayiv koros. And the same thing he says. Look what he says. He says, it's a wonderful, I think. He says, chen gemilas chasodim. Take the case of chesed, how it changed. He gives just one example of many. It's a very poignant example. Chen gemilas chasodim, look what he says. Shekoyde matan Torah, hine lehalvois beribis gamkin toivehi. Al pisechel, to lend money on interest, you're still doing him a favor. Of course, not talking about extortion interest. Talking about common interest. And before Matan Torah, interest was allowed on loans, right? To be taken on loans. Now it was allowed, it's considered doing a chesed. You're giving him a loan. And he points it out, the thousand you're there. Semikuf samasim kod malach. All of a sudden, now that the Torah was given, right? So now you're not allowed to take interest from a yid unless you work it out with the heteriske, according to the way the Chachomim worked it out, the specific way how to work it out. But now it comes out that to take, literally, right, to take interest on the loan, not only is that an act of chesed, but now it turns out that there's tremendous einish, tremendous punishment on that. Gemilas chasodim, he koyed a matan Torah. To give a loan on ribis, on interest, before matan Torah was gemilas chesed, it was an act of chesed. Because I'll say, one is malva bribis, does not get up to chis hamesim. So look at the vast difference between a kotz and a kotz from one end to the other. So of course you have to do it al pi halacha. There's ways of doing things al pi halacha. So here shows the Reb Chaim. Once we have in Torah, the definition of chesed also changes. What might have been considered to be chesed before the Torah was given, now the Torah was given, so it comes out now. When we say, there are three things. Torah, avoda, gemilas chasodim. The truth is, they're not three separate things. Why? Torah is one. Gemilas chesed also has to be al pi Torah. And avoda karbonis also has to be b'Torah. So Torah really runs through all three. That's the Nekudah Reb Chaim says. Because Gemilas Chesed also is only considered Gemilas Chesed if it's done according to the Torah. And you can see it today. Today, for example, the society is moving very, very much to the left in terms of something called mercy killing. Mercy killing. So according to the laws of the Torah, this is murder. Mercy killing. It'll come a time soon, somebody, right, they may decide in certain places there is such a thing, right? If you're over 80, right? Maybe it's not worth allowing you to live. No medical attention. And certain to hasten death in certain situations we find. Even today in the hospital is a very dangerous situation. Because when you have elderly patients, if you're not on top of it, and say this very clearly because I have this all the time. All the times I hear from people ask all different kinds of shilas. If you're not on top of it, literally they will starve a patient to death. They would not give them fluids. They would say no, and they give you all kinds of situations why not to do it, and try to explain it to you why this is the best way to do it. And the idea is just to quicken the person's life. Now there are certain guidelines. I mean, when you're allowed to be inactive or be passive, but you can be active to hasten death. But you can sometimes be passive, not always have to do certain things. But there's certain basis you have to do. So this is right, but now there's a comical person killing. Certainly there is something like assisted suicide, all these types of situations. But this is all in the name of chesed. Society changes the definition of chesed. It starts out in one place of the world, then slowly it trickles down to other areas, and that's what happens. And it's given a name. It's called mercy. It's mercy killing, and so on and so forth. Or you have abortion, it's killing. All the various types of rationalization that is given, why we should do it, why we should not do it this time. So it might have been chesed before the Torah was given. Now we have a Torah, totally different definition of what is chesed. We are not
on our own to be able to judge by our human mind what we think is chesed. But actually, we have to follow the guidelines of the Torah. The Torah tells us that, in fact, is chesed. That's what Reb Chaim is saying. What might have been considered chesed before we had a Torah, but now it's no longer that way. Now we have a Torah, we have to follow the dictates of the Torah. That is the only definition of chesed. And that's the way we do avodah with korbanos also, only with the Torah said to sacrifice the korbanos. Not anywhere you want to, somewhere in your backyard, and so on. So Reb Chaim goes further. Uklolish shaldover. Here he says, the principle is the following. Now we have a Torah. There's nothing that is really acceptable if it's not agreeable with the Torah. Very simple. Simple statement. Begins and ends with Torah. There's nothing that's really appropriate, because everything you can find in the Torah. Everything you find in the Torah. So the klal is, the rule is, there's nothing that's really appropriate if the Torah doesn't sanction it. The Yishkad al-Dal Saseh Tomid. And therefore, you have to study the various chapters of the Torah. Because it's important. If you don't study, then you don't know. Rav Chaim said quite simply, the Torah is such a vast, right, an enormous source of information. The list of general principles are many. And in addition to the very particular details, there's so many particular details that he's given, tremendous details, which if you don't learn, he says, very easily, you could slip, not being aware. If you don't learn, then you're not aware. And he brings, Rabbi Akiva, take the great Rabbi Akiva, talk Rabbi Akiva in the early days. Akiva became the greatest Tana of all time. Akiva became the greatest Rebbe of all time. He had 24,000 Talmidim, as we know. And unfortunately, between Pesach and Shavuot, that's the Sfira period, they died, as we know. And Rabbi Akiva, when he started out to embark on his career in learning, so at that time he was not yet far from the great Rabbi Akiva, we find in Masechta Smochos the following. Rabbi Akiva, when he was embarking in the beginning of starting the career about learning, Motzo Meis Mitzvah, means he found on the road somewhere, in a forest, he found a dead person. A mes mitzvah, someone, you find a desperate, a person who was abandoned, there's no one there to bury him. That's one of the biggest and greatest mitzvahs, is to bury a person. You find someone who clearly, there's no one around here. He's there, there's no one around. You are there, you find him, it's your mitzvah, mes mitzvah. And even, as we say, this mes mitzvah, you know, is so great, that if, for example, you're a father, and you have a bris to go to your own son, right? To do a bris milah to your son, meis mitzvah comes first. And delay the bris if you have to. So says the Gemara. And if in fact you happen to be a kohen who's not allowed to, right? To defile himself, to come in contact with a dead body, no, when it's a meis mitzvah, when it's a dead body with there and there's nobody there to take care of him, you might be a kohen, you could even be a kohen gadol, right? You can be a high priest, the greatest kohen. You have a chiyuv and it's a mitzvah to bury him. Not only that, if possible, you bury him where you find him, if possible. Kiv did not know the halacha, talking about the beginning of his career. So he picked up the dead person, and he tried to carry him to some very, very special place. That's how we are told the story. He finds the mitzvah, v'noso oisa kama milin. And he carried him right for many, many milin. Many, many milin means like a number of miles. But he was not aware ki meis mitzvah koin de mekoimoi. Did not know the halacha that a meis mitzvah is koin de mekoimoi means he acquires the spot where he is. Did not know that. The choshev, he thought he was doing a great mitzvah by transporting the meis to some other, maybe more choshev a place. He thought he was doing a mitzvah gedoyla. When he found out, yoda ki oshem, he sinned. So say chadal. So here we have a situation. In other words, he meant well. He thought he was doing a great chesed. But if you're doing a great chesed, which is against the Torah, it could be still like spilling blood instead of doing a chesed. So according to your mind, you thought he was doing a great chesed. He took the meis mitzvah to bury him somewhere, who knows, in some chosh of a place. But at the end of the day, Chazal said just the opposite. He didn't do a chesed. Because meis mitzvah klein mekoymoy. If it's possible, you bury him where you find him. Ki kein derech kolam is chesed. This is the derech of anybody who tries to do chesed. V'loyada din Torah. There's not other din Torah. V'komishoma v'loya amoris chosid. So say Chazal. Someone who is not learned. Someone who is ignorant cannot be able to be a chosid. Why? Yes, in his mind he thinks he's doing right. He wants to do right. He's trying to do right. But if he doesn't know the halacha, then he can't do it. There's so much that can go wrong. And therefore, says Reb Chaim, once we have a Torah, you have to make sure that you know what the Torah wants. And only according to Torah is it going to be called chesed and so on. So V'nei Shoma David says Reb Chaim Elojim further, that's what Dovra Melo says in Tehillim Kuf Yutes. Dovra Melo says Ne'er L'ragli Devorecho. He describes the greatness of Torah. And he says the Torah is like a candle. Ne'er L'ragli Devorecho. Your words, the words of Torah, is like a lamp, right? It's like a lamp by my foot. It's like a lamp for my foot. But then he says, V'or, and it's a light, L'nsivosi, for my path. So he compares the Torah to a ner, sort of like a candle, and then to a great light. What are the two different comparisons? Ner L'ragli Devorecho, he compares it to a ner. Devorecho, your words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your words, it's like a ner, it's like a lamp, like a candle. And then he says, like a great light to illuminate my path. So Chaim says, I'll explain to you. Let's understand what's the difference between a candle and a torch. He goes on to say, for example, the Gemara tells us, very soon is going to come up, of course, Pesach, and the night before Erev Yontif, what do? We do B'dikas Chometz. And the Halacha said B'dikas Chometz should not be done with a Havdalah candle, which has many, many flames, many, many wicks. It should be done with a simple candle. Why? Because a simple candle can get into the small crack, so to speak. When you have a large flame, then you're not able to find or to put it into, right, into corners. First of all, you're afraid also because of the large flame that it may catch things on fire. So we're more appropriate for small local situations is a candle. So again, it says very clearly, Ner lebedika yofa mavuka. A candle for bedika is better, says the Gemara, for bedika's chometz. A simple candle is better than a torch, or like using a havdalah candle. Why? Even though when it comes to the mitzvah of havdalah, right? A simple candle is not good, not good enough. Avdol havdalah mitzvah bavuka yoser. When it comes to the mitzvah of havdalah, we take an avuka, we take a torch-like candle. But when it comes to bedika's chometz, we take a simple candle. Why? Vatam shebemokim tzar, because when you want to get into narrow areas, yefshel livdak yofeb bagavuka. When you get into narrow areas, you can't check well if you have a large torch. Why? Sheoira koifes, the light jumps. So the Torah Gdoisha has both milas, as a mile of a torch and as a mile of a candle. And explains. It's ner l'ragli, it's like a candle, which means it gets into all small places, and also it's oil, like a large torch. The Torah has both milas. For example, if someone goes on a dark road, so you need both, he says. You need a torch, but you should be able to see the road. You should be able to see the road. You need a torch to illuminate the road. So you have an avuka, you have a torch. It illuminates, he should be able to see the road. But now that he sees the road, but he wants to be able to recognize whether there's a pothole or not, there you have to something that focuses more. Then a candle is better, because that focuses more on the narrow areas. So va'achikach, later, the torch is just a general light. But va'achikach b'derech atzmo, when you're on the road itself, l'das, to know, bein mokem zeh ha'derech, l'mokem achaboy sederech. You notice, because when you travel, you need both a candle and a torch. You need both a candle and a torch, because the torch basically illuminates the general area. But the smaller areas, the detailed areas, exactly, that's what the candle does. It focuses on local areas, on local points. So he says the same way. So he said, Lozet Sorch Iun Dak Bener. For that, to be able to focus on local areas, on a specific spot, for that you need an air. The Torah is also like that. In other words, the Torah is like a ner that basically shows me the right place where I'm allowed to step. When you make a move, you want to do something, how you behave. The Torah is like a ner. By learning Torah, it illuminates. Like a candle, it focuses exactly on the spot what you want to be doing. That's a candle.
in general, life in general, is like a torch to illuminate your life in general. The oir, and it's a light, l'chol ha'nesivet, to your entire path, that's the Torah. So again, just like when a person travels, he needs both a candle and a torch. You need also, right? You also need a torch. Now you need a torch to provide general light, and a candle is necessary to provide specific light. The Torah is also that. Your general guidelines in life is the Torah, like a torch, but also like a nair, which means specifically when you want to focus to do something, the Torah will tell you exactly this is right, this is wrong, and so on and so forth. Therefore, achar matan Torah, after the Torah was given, shekolin yenase na b'madrega yoyse gevoye. Now that the Torah is given, we are now on a higher level. It's no longer up to the human mind. Before the Torah was given, the human mind said, this is right, this is wrong. It was up to the human mind. Now we're answering to a higher authority. Now this is Yoyse Givoya. The Efshir Lonu Lasa Yisua Voido. We cannot decide to sacrifice Karbonis when we want, where we want. Ugimels Chasodim, even acts of Chesed. Rak Kifi HaTorah. Vazoyse, therefore, Hine, HaTorah Eineno Ato Umut Shlishi Levadeno. The Torah is not just a third pillar. The Torah is part of all three. We have three pillars. Torah, Avodah Gimel Chasodim. Torah is all three. Ki im, except, Hi Kol HaShloish HaAmudim B'yachad. Ki Belodah, because without the Torah, Lo Yikoyin Mo, you don't have anything. Either Torah, you have all three. Without Torah, you don't have anything. That is how to visualize the relationship between the three Amudim, Torah, Avodah Gimel Chasodim. You have all three, but all three only how? Guided all by the Torah. So it begins with Torah, and it ends with the Koyach of Torah. So let's go, boys, to the sheet now. Let's find out some fascinating inyonim here. Okay. the first item here is we had in the Ruach Chaim that Bepochus Mishnei Raglayim in Oil Moimit. Before the Torah was given, we had to have at least two, Gemilas Chasodim and Avoida. Because without two legs, the world cannot stand. You need to have at least two. After the Torah was given, we have three. Just like a human being, without two legs, cannot stand, and one leg you can't stand. Person is an Oilam Kotten. If an Oilam Kotten cannot stand on one leg, the Oilam Godel, the world at large, can also not stand on one leg. You need the two. What did you have the two? Which of the two? Raglayim, before Torah? It was Avodah and Gimel Chasodim. Two legs, three legs. Now that we have the Torah stands on three legs, three pillars. What we have is something very fascinating here from the Yaros of Ash, that's Rebbe Yoyitz and Ibshitz, in Drush Dalet. And so Ibshitz, of course, was the preeminent Goyen of his time, really recognized worldwide as being the greatest of his time. Actually, it's mentioned that he was the greatest Rosh Yeshiva of his time as well, who lived in the 1700s, the early 1700s, and passed away 1764, actually, in Hamburg, in Germany. And he had 20,000 Talmidim. If you think about it, as I say many times, the mode of travel then was not like today, you know. And certainly the publicity was not like today, where you're able to hear about a certain academy and everybody wants to go there. It doesn't take much time to go there. Either the mode of travel was very, very difficult, and certainly information and news did not travel a certainly very long time through letters and carriers and so on and so forth. And yet his fame really went all over and attracted Talmidim from all over the world, literally, all over Europe, certainly. And 20,000 Talmidim of his time. And of course we know the great controversy that he had. He was very great in Kabbalah as well. And when he became the Rav in Hamburg, there was a situation where many, many women, pregnant women, did not successfully able to give birth because many of the children were stillborn, or basically they just lost their child before, but it was the pregnancy. And therefore he would give a certain amulet, which is called a kameya, which he would write certain shemus of Kabbalah. They would write, and all of a sudden it just disappeared, the problem disappeared. And Rabbi Yanki Demden, who also he was a resident, as we know, in Hamburg at the time, the way the legend goes is that he opened up one of them, and he became very shocked, because according to him, the way he deciphered the message, that he said that whoever wrote this Kameh means that he is a student of
Shabtai Tzvi, the great heretic. And therefore, that started the beginning of a tremendous, tremendous milchoma, of course, which actually shook the world, literally. And even in Hamburg, the Goyish world got involved in the King of Denmark, because Hamburg then belonged to the Kingdom of Denmark. And the stock market was closed for a day or two due to the big machlokes that took place at that particular time. So in any case, but history certainly exonerated him. He still remains the greatest of all. So in the Sefer Yaris Davash, it basically means forests of honey, Yaris Davash. And it brings down a very fascinating Gemara. Listen to this, Rabbi Yisrael. The Zeru Amorim B'Gemara D'Tainis. There's a Maisa in the Gemara D'Tainis. The Sho'alo Eishes Reb Chanina Ben Doise. In the Gemara, Reb Chanina Ben Doise is the one that singled out as being sort of being like the great, all of them were tzaddikim. But he was the one, if you needed a bracha, panosa, health, you would go to him. He was considered to be an open miracle worker, Reb Chanina Ben Doise. He himself lived in abject poverty, didn't have anything. And the Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a heavenly voice came out and said, the whole world is being sustained in this chus of Reb Chanina Ben Doise, but he does not need anything. That is, all of his chusim is distributed to the world. It's just simply being distributed all over the world. He himself has nothing. He doesn't need anything. So what happened is, finally, his Rebbe, you know, got a wind of it, and he said, listen, how long do we have to suffer? So the Gemara tells us here in Tainus, the Shuala, Eishes, Rechanina, Bendoisa, Admosa, Nitzaron, how long will we have to be in pain? How long do we have to suffer in poverty? Now, you're helping out the whole world. You're giving them a bracha to become rich. What about us? Well, Bikish Rachme, so he davened. Bikish Rachme davened. The Yovelei and Shemaim from heaven came down. Chad Kared de Harvest. A leg, a golden leg. Like a golden leg of the table, let's imagine. But a golden leg was worth a fortune. So what happened later on? So Hoda Chazia. So later on, in a dream, Hoda Chazia Bechelma, later on he saw in a dream, they gave him in a dream a picture of the next world, the future world. And he saw in a dream the tzaddikim Yosvi, that the tzaddikim are sitting in Gan Eden, the psayra de gimel, a table that has three legs, but his table only has two legs, because one of them was given to you down here in this world. In other words, of the future schar, the future reward, his table only has two legs. He saw this in a dream. They showed him in a dream. That's what I'm mentioning here. We're just talking about two legs. The world stands on two legs, three legs. So he says in a dream that his table is going to be lacking a leg. His wife found out about this. Omra, the wife, said, if that's the case, then by making use now from this golden leg, I don't need it. I don't want that as a result of making use of this golden leg, we're going to be losing out in the next world. So you know what happened? He davened again, and Shemaim, a hand came down, Shemaim took it back. Took it back. So the Gemara says, Boy Rachmi, davened again, the shock eliminated, took it. And the Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a Braise, Godol Neis Achrim Rishon. The second miracle is bigger than the first. Why? The Gemara, we have a tradition, Shemaim gives, Shemaim doesn't take back. Here they took back also. This is the Gemara. Okay? This is the simple Gemara. Now, okay? So Yesh Lovins, so Rabbi Yosef Naibshi says, let's understand what's going on over here. First of all, is there really a difference if the table has two legs or three legs? If the table stands, it's okay, right? Do I care how many legs? If the table falls apart, it's something else. But if the table is able to stand, it didn't say that the table is falling apart. It says, all tzaddikim have a table with three legs. Your table has, what's the difference? Two legs, five legs, six. The table is the table. So what's the big deal? Two legs, three legs. What's the nafkimina? That's number one. And then is my in is elipsoir the gimeloi base karoim. What's an afkimina, he says, if the table has three legs or two? The gam also, maze gimiri, the Gemara says we have a tradition, may have yohiv, they give, but they don't take back. If you understand, why don't they take back? You know, there's a posik that says Hashem knows and Hashem gives and Hashem take back. We say the chaz v'shalom by levaya, by funeral. Right? One of the psukim that we say Hashem gave and Hashem took back, so Hashem gives and Hashem does take back. So why does the Gemara all of a sudden say, Shemaim gives, Shemaim doesn't take back? Really? Hashem nosan, Hashem gives, had given, and Hashem lokach. Hashem took it back. Avlinyan, now listen, so he explains it with very interesting, homiletically, very beautifully. Avlinyan shoysa mistairis, you know what the tsar was? Loi chaz v'sholon l'saneg u'lisanin chaz v'sholon. The tsar that she expressed, Rabbi Yonis explained, was not that she wanted to really have a lot of worldly pleasures. That's what she was named. She's a big tzaddikus. The lack of fortune that she complained about, you know why? If you're a tzaddik And we're supposed to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we don't have any material goods, we can't give tzedakah. We're not able to do chesed. That was her concern. Her concern was that we don't have, if we ourselves are living in poverty, we don't have the ability. There's Torah in the world. The world stands on three pillars. Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasodim, right? Three pillars. You know what? We do not have a share in Gemilas Chasodim. We're not able to do Gemilas Chasodim. We have nothing to give. So the question was, he says, that was her tzar, that was her pain. Her pain was not that she wanted the worldly pleasures. Ulisadin chazeshom, because she wanted extra comfort of some sort. Tzadikim, look, these were tzadikim shenistapku me'erev Shabbos to Shabbos bekav charuvim. These were tzadikim that they had enough from week to week, from Shabbos to Shabbos, a bushel of carob, buxer as they call it, carob. That was enough for them. It was enough. For Hurguli boy, they were used to that. They were accustomed to that. Yet for moisters, you think now they need extras? No. Rakol saron hoy bishul tzedakah. The tzar was because tzedakah laniyim. Ki choshvu, they thought shegimilas chasodim ofei setzlom. They thought that gimilas chasodim is something that's extinct. They're not able to do gimilas chesed. Ki bamei yischazun, how am I going to do chesed, they thought. Ki ein le'el yodom, they don't have the ability. And yet they were Bali Rachman, they were people at tremendous Rachmanis. They were willing, they were wanting. They were hoping to have the opportunity to do chesed. We have nothing to distribute, we have nothing to give, we have nothing to share. Boye Bali Rachman v'chemlo. And when they saw a poor person, Uberoyim oni v'evyim, when they saw a poor person, and they couldn't help him, they had tremendous tzar. That tzar, what was the tzar? The tzar they were not able to help. That was the tzar that they had. The tzar was when they saw an oni, they saw a poor person around them. Tzarosom tzara, that was their tzar. The tzar of the oni, the tzar of the poor person became their tzar, their pain. Mipas hedra mitzvah, because they couldn't do the mitzvah. When pas teva, and also for the nature of chamlusom, the nature of the rachmanis that they have. So they thought that maybe therefore we're going to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give us ashiras, give us richness. If you give us riches, we'll be able to do chesed. We'll have to do tzedakah. That was the chesed. Not because they wanted it for themselves. Kim Ligmoil Chesed, Lu'um Lolem to tragic people of Aniyim. Says Rabbi Yosef in a tremendous Chiddush. However, they made a mistake in the Cheshvan. Omnom be'emes, nehepech machshavtom. He says, I'm going to stop for a moment. Rabbi Yosef says, listen to this story Rabbi Yosef said. We have a cloud, the Gemara tells us. If you want to do a mitzvah, if you really want to do a mitzvah, and you don't have the opportunity to do it, you call the noinus. Chishiv lasis mitzvah v'nenas, the Gemara says, and brachas davov. If you want to do a mitzvah, and the noinus happens, you couldn't do it, because Baruch gives you credit as if you did it. Again, if you wanted to do a mitzvah, you really wanted to do a mitzvah, but something happened, whatever the reason is, you couldn't do it, the Gemara says you didn't lose out. Because Baruch knows your mind, because Baruch knows machshava, he'll give you credit as if you did it. Now, when Baruch Hu gives you credit, he gives you credit as if you did it perfectly. But when you are doing a mitzvah yourself actively, then that mitzvah may not be as perfect. Why? Because maybe you should have done it better. Maybe you should have done it with more heart. Maybe you should have had a bigger smile. Maybe you should have given more. Maybe you should have given less over here, more over there. When we do a mitzvah ourselves as human beings, right, our actions, our actual actions are not perfect for many, many reasons. So Kadosh Baruch Hu gives someone, let's say, a tremendous fortune. Who says he gave enough tzedakah? Who says that he used the money right? How do you know? Now, if you don't have it, if you don't really have it, and you really wanted to do tzedakah, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I consider it. I consider it as if you did it perfectly. But now that you're doing it actively, you may not be doing it as perfect. So it goes on to point as follows. Omnom, the emes. Nehepech machshavtom is the opposite. Ki kozman she'ein lohem. Kozman, they did not have the ability to do tzedakah. And they had tzar. Umistalem alzeh. Harei lohem legmilas chesed gomor. You hear that? Not being able to do it and wanting to do it, that was considered in heaven, in Shemaim, for gemilas chesed gomor. Ukeilu gomlu chesed imaniim betachlis ha'gmola. Mamish doing it on the highest level of our chesed. Omnom im yilahem, but now if they do have the means,
If you do have the means, the question is, first of all, do you really have the ability to give any oni, can you really give every oni everything that he needs? Of course not. You can't give every oni everything that he needs. Right? And certainly, you don't always have the right decision. I give more to this one and less to that one. You give more to this one. Tzedakah is a mishpat, which means to say it's also something to be done right. And a male also, he says, Nefisha Ramoy, what about all those, he says, imposters that come to collect money? Right? So you never know for sure that you're doing the mitzvah actually right. And so on. And then you have Anim B'nei Toivim, then you have El Chaniim, who they're not going to receive. They're not going to receive. You already gave to others who are imposters. Anim B'nei Toivim and El Chaniim, Asher Mazav V'Bush Al Pneim, who unfortunately, they're embarrassed to take. Yotzurek, they're going to go out empty-handed. Uchadayim and so on and so forth, all different types of mistakes. Ba'amech Sholom, right? Different types, Asher Tachas, Yadodim B'zev, the Yotzur Schor B'Fseidim, many times. Your schar basically is detracted by the hefsid. It comes out the yamayit megvilas chesed yoyser mikodem. It comes out that now you're doing less gemilas chesed. So you need an ala machshove kemaise. Machshove kemaise is on a higher level. The veltzel, like the Rebbe of Lublin, the Chozel of Lublin, was once given a kibbutz to come and be a son to get a bris. His son to get a bris. Now you can only do the bris by day. At night you can't do it. It's a tremendous chus to have the Chozel of Lublin to be a son to get a bris. Turns out that the time of the bris arrived and he's not here. So they postponed the bris. Delay the bris. How long can you delay the bris? Well, until sundown, until Shkiah. Before Shkiah, you can still do the bris. Turns out that Shkiah arrives just about. He's not here yet. They had no choice. They had to take another Sandik. And they did the bris. Right after they did the bris, the Chozel arrives. And the father of the baby was very much upset. He says that the Chozel, that he lost out, that the Chozel was not the Sandik. The Chozel said, I came out better. Why? If I be the actual Sandik, he says, to do, he says, the mitzvah of Sandik, he says, I would do it according to my human capabilities. The human seichel is limited. Human ability is limited in terms of how great one does a mitzvah. It's only according to the capabilities of a human being. Now that I wanted to be Sandik and I couldn't, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me credit as if I did it. I got credit like I did it perfectly. When a Kadosh Baruch Hu gives credit, he gives the credit like a perfect mitzvah. So wanting to do it sometimes can be greater than actually doing. So the Yisrael of Shizlos to say like this. Now look at the marshal here. Now look at the marshal with the table. Remember, he got the table, right? He got the golden, got a golden leg. What did he see in a dream? In the dream, he saw all tzaddikim sitting on a table of three legs. His has only two. You know what it meant? Listen to what it means. All tzaddikim are eating on a shulchan of gimel regolim. Hainu gimel regolim sho'olam oimed aleihem. We're talking about the three pillars of the world. All tzaddikim had three things under their belt. Their table had Torah, avodah gimel chasodim. Even though they had nothing to give when they were alive, but the machshava that they wanted to give gave them the credit of doing tzedakah also. So all the tzaddikim had their table. Shemayim showed their table had three legs, three pillars. Torah, avodah, and gemilas chasodim. But he, now that he got gold, now that he got a golden leg, now he has to do tzedakah bepoil actively. His mitzvah sounds so perfect. So his table only has two. There's Torah and avodah, but the gemilas chasodim is not as perfect. His gemilas chasodim is not as perfect as those tzaddikim. That's what it means. His table only had two legs. One leg was missing. The leg of gemilas chasodim was actually missing. They came by gemilas chasodim. Flekach ein loy rak shulchan beiz raglayim. Right, regolim. They only had two legs. Hayna toyer b'avoyde. Can it smayit because they became reduced? As mentioned before, because when you're actually doing a mitzvah, you're only doing it according to human terms. You're only doing your human capabilities. There's a lot of room for error when you actually do tzedakah on your own. Flekach is nachem boy. Right. Okay, so let's leave the two lines. Blakach is spal, everyone is spal, shikhu emet, you should take it away. Right? Take it away. Valiyos. Now, to take it away, but that's the point here. The question asks is, well, why is it such a big chiddush they took it away? But the Gemara says it's a bigger chiddush that they took it away. You know why? Because once he had it, to take it away, you're depriving the poor people now. Because now that you have the golden leg, so why not you have the golden leg for Shemayim to take it back? We're depriving now the poor people. So it's not so pushy that your mind should take back the golden leg. Because now that you have the golden leg, He was supposed to distribute it to the people. For Leoiski Zekari did the Hava, being that this is a golden leg. Hanitloy. It was not for him. They didn't give Shimon didn't give him the golden leg for him. Because what we're saying is he wanted to do Gemilas Chesed. It was Rak Lesor Hanim. Lachalkum Beyakov distributed among the Jews. How did he take it away from him? Lahafsid Laniim to cause, right? To cause Hefsid. To cause Hefsid Laniim. He really wanted to help the Aniyim. He wanted to help the poor people. Now that we're taking back the gold leg, comes that the poor people are going to be losing. So this nest, to take it away, Lishkel Shokel was a gewaldige. However, being that Chirin Ben Doisa had so many schusim, Shemaim did his bidding. He didn't want, what? He didn't want that, what? Then Shemaim should have only two legs. He wanted his table shots have three legs. Because when a person really wants to do a mitzvah on the highest level, he doesn't have the ability to do it, so Kadosh Baruch Hu gives him the credit, as if he has done it. I said it will be Mikatsa. I don't see how it will be Mikatsa, but I'll be Mikatsa. Just we'll end with a little mice over here. It's a very interesting little mice here, Rabbi Sai. I remember Rav Palm's drosha many years ago at the Agudah convention when he spoke about the Russian children, right, all over, who have come out of Russia and they have absolutely no opportunity for Jewish education. And that was, that started in 1991 actually, that was the inception of the Shuvu schools. Shuvu schools mean return. Return. And something like that, it established, I may be underestimating it by now, because as we speak, as I'm sure every year there's more schools. 67 schools, based throughout the country, educating more than 15,000 boys and girls from the former Soviet Union. Tonight, I once had the opportunity also of being in Israel. They took me by car, showed me one or two schools to try to speak to them. They actually speak in Hebrew, spoke in sort of a mixture of Hebrew, English, and Yiddish or something. And so this is what it was, anyway. So there was in Akko, which is in the northern part of Israel, Akko. So there was an eight-year-old boy, his name was Lior Shifrin, that was the name. Lior Shifrin, Russian boy. And so he's listening to his teacher, who basically Mrs. Linder was the name, who told the class the story of Hanukkah for the first time. He's 8 year old boy, he hears the story of Hanukkah. And the Russian immigrant children, right, were of course not accustomed to see the fathers lighting Hanukkah candles, menorah. Many of them never even heard, as we said, of Hanukkah. So this teacher, Mrs. Linder, explained to the kids everything about Hanukkah. And she detailed that the Syrian Greeks also, that among the things that they forbade the Jews to perform was a bris milah. And also to keep Shabbos. In other words, she said, we're just like under the communists, where you're coming from. Just like under the communists. The same thing was years ago by the Nes of Hanukkah, that the Syrian Greeks also, that they forbade the Jewish people to have a bris milah. And also, most Jews had no choice but to work on Shabbos. So after Hanukkah, the school had a two-day vacation. So when school resumed, so this Lior was absent. This boy Lior, 8-year-old boy, was absent. Didn't seem unusual. Many children were home. Many times either they had a cold. Some also maybe did not yet return from visiting relatives. Hanukkah vacation. 3 days went by and still this boy Lior, he didn't appear. So Mrs. Linder was sort of like, she was concerned. She was concerned. So she asked his classmates, this boy's classmates, where he might be, but they had no idea. Maybe Lior's parents were upset that the school was too religious, which was many times such a situation. They were quite upset to see that the children were becoming so religious. And maybe they transferred him to a public school. So the thought, the teacher, Mrs. Linder, the thought of losing somebody as Lior alarmed her. And because he was a child of great potential. So after school that afternoon, she calls the mother to inquire about him. Why is he not in school? And the mother says, it's your fault. He's not in school because of you. Mrs. Linda tried to recall, maybe she scolded the boy, maybe she embarrassed him. My fault, what did I do? Says, yes, you taught him that the Syrian Greeks were like the Russians, didn't allow infant boys to have a bris. So he wanted to know what's a bris. So when he insisted that we tell him what a bris meal is, he inquired if he ever had a bris. When we told him that he hadn't, he absolutely insisted he would not return to school until he had one. We had no choice but to arrange a moil to perform a bris. He came to the hospital this morning, but he'll be back in school tomorrow. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, my boy, sorry.